Just a heads up, everyone. This podcast features adults having adult conversations, and there might be the chance of adult language. Also, we may talk about some difficult grieving experiences and themes of mental distress that can trigger some people. If this conversation stirs up some hard emotions for you, please reach out to someone you trust. Hi, I'm Tatiana Rotere, and you are listening to Crazy Grief, the podcast. Grief can make us feel like we're going crazy. It affects our emotions, our physical health, and our mental state. It has a huge impact in the way we relate to people and the way we see ourselves. Crazy Grief is a safe space for us to have candid conversations about grief and all the crazy stuff that comes with it. We are here to share our stories, how we cope with grief, and what kind of help really helps. If you lost your person and you feel like you're going crazy, let me reassure you, you're not going crazy. You're just grieving. So let's talk about it. Hello, my friend. I'm so glad that you're here for one more episode of Crazy Grief Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about grief in the workplace. And it's my absolute pleasure to bring to you this amazing woman, Edith, who used to be my supervisor when I was working in mental health. And I can tell you that without her help, her input, her compassion, her challenge, I would be very much stuck in some places in terms of my work, my career. And she has helped me tremendously at a time in my life when I was dealing with a lot of grief from my husband's death that triggered other kinds of grief and lots of difficulties at work and a lot of difficulties with my own mindset and how I saw myself. Anyway, she is incredible. She is the driving force behind Active Work-Life Solutions. She's an organizational psychologist. She uses her expert knowledge in a professional and pragmatic way. She has over 25 years of experience in business and consulting worldwide, and she has faced a broad range of issues with her clients. She loves a challenge, and she enjoys complex problems as well, but she has this incredible capacity to hold space for the complexities of somebody that comes with their issues and is trying to do their best at work, but sometimes life and work balance are not quite there. I can tell you from my personal experience that what she had offered me and created in terms of a safe space so for our supervision sessions was truly invaluable for me. Now, this is just one of her many hats. She is also a certified yoga teacher. An amazing one. She is also a sex therapist. And I'm going to put at the end of the show, I will put her details on the show notes. So check her out, go on her website, contact her if you resonate with some of the things that we're going to talk about today. So without further ado, I just want to welcome you, my beautiful friend now, after being my supervisor for a year, my beautiful friend, Edith. How are you today?
Thank you very much, Tatiana. And I feel quite honored to hear your introduction. And I feel a bit nervous now that I have to live up to all those positive things you were saying about me. So thank you for that. And thank you for having me, because it is quite a heavy and complex issue when people have a major loss in their lives and have to carry on working because not many people have the luxury to take more than whatever the allocated time is their organization or business allow them to be away while they are dealing with the death of a loved one. So it is something which is very individual, of course, because we all grieve very, very differently. And I guess the most important aspect for anybody is to acknowledge for themselves that they will grieve differently from anybody else who they know. And if they read any books or anything, they might give some guidance. Maybe some of them will resonate with them. Others, they will think, well, it's gobbledygook, it doesn't make any sense to me. But the most important is to listen to their own needs, wants, and try to navigate those and find people who will assist or guide that.
Mm-hmm.
Not put any pressure on how to do it, how not do it, but more sort of surround yourselves with people who love you, mm-hmm. who support you, who would want you to feel the grief but allow a gentle movement with that grief. Because I guess the worst thing is when people don't deal with it and get stuck. And we all get stuck with all sorts of issues, including grief at certain times. But again, with that softness, with that love, with that guidance and support, you can stop and feel those big emotions.
Mm.
But then after that wave comes, it will go, just like in the ocean. You know, the waves come and then they settle. Waves come and then they settle. And sometimes those waves are extremely wild.
Yeah.
Other times they are gentle. Mm-hmm. But you know it will change. And I think that's the most important aspect, to know that wherever you are, it won't be like that forever.
Yeah.
It will move and change.
That is a really important point, because I think from my experience in talking to a lot of other people that have lost a significant person in their lives, initially when the grief is really intense, especially in the first few weeks and months, you feel like the grief is perpetual, that you're always going to feel like that. It's like a huge tsunami that hit you, and then the devastation is like, where do I even begin to, you know, fix, what can I, you can't fix, right? But it's so overwhelming, and that feeling that it's going to be like this forever it feels so true in those times. But then you do feel like exactly what you said about waves. I use that analogy a lot, and I find that the same way that a wave, you can see it coming, and then it peaks, and then it crashes, and then it subsides. And I find that for me, my grief experiences have been like that. And the more I have, you know, strong support systems around me in the times of my life, when I had more of like a real connection to people and some well-being practices that I was doing intentionally on a daily basis, I've noticed that I was able to come up for air a lot quicker, and the waves were not as damaging, you know. But in the times when I did not have that support, or I was somewhat just slacking on my own, looking after myself, supporting myself, that was when the waves would come, and then I would feel devastated for days on end. So with that in mind, because we're talking about, you know, those waves and how we express our grief and how it can affect us, one of the main reasons why I wanted to bring you on the show was because I think this is a really important topic that not a lot of people talk about, which is, how do you carry your grief in the workplace? My personal experience has been incredible, because I have been very fortunate to not have had to go to work straight away. I had amazing friends and family that supported me financially. And also, I live in New Zealand, where we have, you know, a scheme from the government that you can get government aid to help you. And also, because I was very sick, I was able to, through my doctor, get some financial assistance from a sickness benefit as well. And everything was really difficult, but I had those buffers. Like, I could pay my rent, I could put food on the table, I could pay for my basic bills, you know. Of course, the financial pressure was there, but it in some ways it wasn't completely, you know, overwhelming. But I know that for a lot of people, they don't have that. So they have to go back straight away and go to work. Oh, by the way, I don't know. Do you know this? How long is, in New Zealand, the allocated time for bereavement leave?
I believe it's minimum of 3 days, but some companies would give a different amount of time. Depends on how close the person who passed. So if it's in immediate family, it could be longer. And some companies are really, really good to give more time, more leave, or you could use your annual leave for it, or leave without pay. So it's good to negotiate that when it happens. But of course, when you are grieving, you are not very good at negotiating. So this is where having a good relationship with your manager, with HR, whoever is responsible for these aspects is paramount, or having somebody in the workplace who could be your support person, mm-hmm. who could be there with you and almost like voice your wants and needs at that point of time, mm-hmm. because it is really, really difficult to think straight when you are, especially in that first phase of grieving. So always work out who is that person who you trust, who could speak for you or who could be there with you. So if you forget something in a meeting, would be able to prompt you of, hey, you know, you forgot to ask for this or talk through this bit, because you might want to go back first, maybe part-time, or you might want to work from home for a period of time. But some people find really a good way to help themselves through this time, throwing themselves back into work, because for that space, they don't have to deal with the grief.
Mm-hmm.
So some people find they can almost like put their work clothes on, go to work, and leave everything else behind, so they don't have to think of the loved one who passed. They don't have to think of all the issues which that created.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like compartmentalizing that time and leave all the grief aside for that short period of time.
Do you think from your experience as a psychologist that this is a healthy process? Because, and I'm not passing judgment at all, because I know that for every person, their needs are very different. And we are so unique in our grief is so unique. We need to really, truly listen to ourselves. And for me, particularly like, personally, that would not work. It didn't work because I couldn't focus. I had lots of other issues going on with my body and my mental health. But I do know a friend of mine who her sister lost her daughter, and going back to work for her was like her saving grace.
Yeah.
But I think my question then is about like, how much is too much? Because for some people, not going back to work at all for months on end can be very detrimental. It might be what they need initially, but if that continues on, that can give them a lack of purpose, a lack of routine, and that can spiral them into being really stuck in their grief. For other people, however, when they go straight into work and they feel like they need to take a break from all those emotions, and work gives them that structure that they can put their mind into something else, that can be really beneficial. But then that can also be used as a way to avoid grieving. And if that happens for too long, in your experience, have you seen how that can be detrimental?
Avoiding grief definitely carries a huge risk that it will come out in a weird way sometimes later on. So by going back to work, either part-time or full-time, gives that structure, gives that space where somebody could focus on something else, a project, other people, different processes. But it doesn't mean, or it shouldn't mean, that they leave the grief alone.
Mm.
They leave work, they still need to address the issues which is rising up for them.
Mm-hmm.
So not avoiding the emotions, not avoiding the grief process, not avoiding the reality of that somebody important is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, in a way, you need to have both ways. And another danger is that some people could become workaholics because they don't want to deal with their personal life. They don't want to deal with the difficulties of grief. Therefore, all they do is work and pretty much eat and sleep. And I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a danger in that as well. Again, having people who bring you back, who ground you into real, both at work and outside of work, good friends, family, colleagues, have those trusted individuals, like those signposts in your life who you could go to just to see how am I doing, and trust their reflection of what is happening with you, how you are dealing or not dealing with certain issues.
Mm-hmm.
So having some structure at the workplace, but having the freedom, but those individuals, those trusted, loved people who you can rely on, who know they would support you, is essential to make sure you don't get stuck in, you know, being at work all the time and focusing only on that, but having that balanced way of going back and forth between your home life, your real life, and then maybe the reality of the workplace, where you can take some of that grief, but of course you need to be there as a staff member. You need to be there and achieve things.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it is so useful and important to have teammates, a team leader, manager, who understands that your performance will not be as great as before the death of a loved one, and it will fluctuate somewhat, because there is a real reason why it's fluctuating. It's not because you are not wanting to perform or do the right thing at work, but you're carrying a lot of stuff from that dramatic space and time and emotions.
So as you're talking, my mind is just bringing back memories of some of our sessions that we had, which I was just like so caught up, and my grief was quite complex, that I had really high expectations of my own performance. And so I felt like I had to perform at the same level that I was before, but I couldn't. And so you were one of those people, right, that kept on bringing me down and kept on bringing me back to, you know, ground myself and open up like this acceptance that I couldn't perform in the same way. So often I think a lot of people can get that pressure from their workmates, from their manager, from their boss. But I think a lot of people also put a lot of pressure on themselves, and giving yourself, cutting yourself some slack, you know, and just going, even if your boss is unrealistic about you performing at the same peak level than before, you need to give yourself the permission to go, I can't, because there's the tsunami has happened in my life and I can't quite find my bearings. So allowing yourself to get back on track step by step. And it might be that you do need to create a new way of relating to work, a new way of relating to your own personal life, going back to those well-being practices as well. I think all of that plays a part. What do you think?
I totally agree with you, Tatiana. And it's not just you, but, you know, a lot of those individuals who, like the type A personalities, the people who's got really high standard and perfectionist, they struggle with this in these times. But there is what I call the good enough concept. sometimes turning up and doing just good enough so you could move forward, you could achieve certain things and tick some boxes is good enough for that day. Maybe the next day you will be able to do a little bit more, maybe not. But accept the fact that for a while, you're not going to do everything 110%. Because a lot of people just live on 65% all the time. But for somebody who wants to achieve like 110%, 120%, to go down only 80% can be a huge, oh my God, I'm not doing things right. I'm not working hard enough. So allow that space. I'm not saying slack off. I'm not saying, you know, make big mistakes. But if you make a mistake, well, you know, hopefully your colleagues and others will sort of give you some slack, as you said, that, well, you know, we need that time to recover. We need that time to allow our brain to focus again on whatever the work task is. And jumping on that concept, what you raised in a couple of times, those well-being practices, what I term self-care. And that's not selfish to care for yourself. It is really should be a baseline for all of us, especially with the stress of losing a loved person in your life. Because if you're not eating, if you're not eating regularly, if you're not eating nutritious food, so really making sure that you are feeding yourself the right nutrients to make sure that your body, your mind can gently function better and better, because you're burning a lot of those things when you are so emotive and emotional and those rising waves, what we talked about. So food, regular good food is really important. And again, friends and family and colleagues could be essential rather than bring you, you know, a cake, but a nice fresh fruit salad. Mm. Rather than bring you a muffin, you know, bring some of the leftover stew and provide you with that. So it's one of those things to ask for and be able to ask for what you need, because most of us have real difficulty to ask for those specifics.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It is one of those gifts or one of those skills some of us need to learn to be able to say, thank you very much. I would really appreciate if you could make me a salad for lunch. Right.
Yeah.
So going further into those well-being practices, those self-care practices, so there's the food, sleep, essential. That's when your whole system, your brain can rest, your body could rest.
But it's so hard sometimes, because sometimes when you are in the middle of this really intense waves of grief, you can't sleep. You can't make yourself sleep. So, you know, do you have any tips for that?
Well, it's not easy because your brain is going over, you know, crazy stuff. So breathing practices, slowing down, deep breath, especially in the abdomen, slow, long breaths, especially focusing on, if you want to fall asleep, focusing on the exhale. So elongate the exhale will help you. It's almost like fooling your neurosystem, neurological system to calm down. So deep, slow breaths, especially elongating, lengthening the exhale. Inhale is important because you need fresh air, but if you want to sleep, you want to lengthen that. Some herbal teas like chamomile tea, maybe with a little bit of honey. If you can drink milk, there is some natural melatonin in milk. Some herbal supplements can help that, but sometimes you need to ride it out. Sometimes it's again time. But if you cannot sleep at night, maybe during the weekend, have an afternoon nap, have a siesta, catch up with the sleep when you can. because you need sleep. Otherwise, you build up what we call the sleep debt, just like a bank account. You know, if you don't sleep enough, you go into the red zone. Mm-hmm. And when you go into that zone, your immune system is compromised. You might get sick. You might get cold sores. You might get a cold. You might get injuries, things like that. So you need the sleep. You need to build up. And all of us at certain times build up some sleep debt. You know, we go down because we don't sleep enough.
Yeah.
But having some extra sleeps, going to bed earlier when you feel that you are exhausted, do that rather than watch Netflix. Screen time is not that great. You know, scrolling on Facebook or Instagram is not that great for your grief process or for your sleep. So coming off Facebook, coming off tablets, Netflix, any sort of two-dimensional stuff is useful. And going out in nature, even a local park.
Yeah.
If it's good weather, put your feet on the sand, in the water, on the grass, ground yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And take your time with it. Sitting, if you're lucky enough to be close to a beach, sit and watch the waves. That's like meditation. Because not everybody is able to close their eyes and meditate, but watching the sky, the clouds move slowly. That is a gentle meditation. So allow yourself to calm down, to slow down. Listen to some music which resonates with you. Sing with it, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, nice and gentle. For some of us, that's wonderful. Some, you need that rocky stuff. You need to get it out and sing with it. You know, maybe in the car, maybe when nobody's at home, turn it up and dance it out. Let it out. Yeah. So have those different ways of knowing and listening to your body, your mind, what it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And again, have somebody who you trust. And if they say, oh, maybe you need to go for a run, if you're a runner, you know, listen to them and go for a run.
Yeah. I met a friend of a friend that started taking boxing after, I think it was her son or her daughter that passed away. And so she just pounded and she was like, there's so much anger, you know, because grief can bring like this array of emotions, right? And for her, anger was the main one. And I think anger is a feeling that gets a really bad rap, especially for women. Like our society does not like when women express anger. For some reason, we are labeled, you know, a lot of really bad names when we express anger. But it's completely understandable that a mother has lost a child. Of course, she would be angry. But then angry at what? You know, angry at whom? And yet the anger is there. And so she started just boxing and she punched that sandbag. Like if that was the sandbag's fault, the daughter passed away. But it was like, she was saying that at one point she would be punching and crying.
Yeah.
And to the point of physical exhaustion. And she said that eventually by doing that week after week, she got this release, you know, and it became then a more focused activity for her. But she had to ride that wave once again.
Yeah. And I'm really pleased that you brought up both anger and that physical activity and physical way of releasing those emotions. Because for some people it's boxing, some people it's dancing, some people it's, I had a client who was cleaning windows. Oh my God, her windows were so clean because that was her way to get rid of that built up emotion and anger. However, we need to be very careful around all these activities, not overdo it to a physical or mental detriment.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that, I had a client a while ago who started running. And this person got so into running, so over excited about that this is the way to get through that. He started to damage his knees, his feet, so didn't listen to those responses, that feedback mechanism from the body to say, hey, mate, you know, you need to slow down.
So it's kind of like an obsession almost then.
Yes, yes. And that's where, you know, and I wanted to sort of bring that up, because some people do have unhealthy practices to manage through. And some people maybe drink for a period of time a little bit more alcohol than usual. And it's okay if it's manageable, if they are not going to work under the influence, if they're not driving. So at times, for a period of time, it's okay. Mm-hmm. But making sure, again, to have those boundaries to make sure that you know what you are doing, have those people you can listen to, and know that you are not going to use these crutches forever, which damage you, damage your relationships with others, especially with those who you love. But allow those to shift and go into more healthy practices to keep you well, to keep you healthy, so you get through.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that is really important, it was really important for me, was to not lie to myself and to be really self-aware. Because there are some things that you do because you just need to cope. You need to get through that day. And I think that there's no shame in saying that, you know, you're drinking a little bit more because you just, because the drinking a little bit more might help you sleep.
Yeah.
But if that's a coping strategy, right? But those things that we do to adapt to the new situation that we're living can then become maladaptive if we don't seek actual help and create a healthy support system around ourselves. Because your coping mechanisms are not supposed to be for life. They're supposed to help you cope for a season. And then once you survive that season, you need to start developing other practices that are more sustainable in the long term. And I think that the danger when you are so immersed in your grief is that, number one, you start pulling away from the people that could become your support system. And number two, you start to shut down your own awareness and just try to cope through the day, and that becomes this vicious cycle. And then 2-3 years down the road, you still haven't really dealt with your grief in a healthy way, and you still, you know, just damaging yourself. And that that will bleed into the relationship with your family members that are still here, with friends, with colleagues at work. It can really damage your career. It can damage your own self-esteem. It's no end to that when we really hold on to those maladaptive coping mechanisms.
I think it's really important not to judge our way, how we cope, especially at the beginning of our grief, and not blame, you know, the alcohol, the chocolate or whatever, because having, you know, a little bit more of those things is okay. But what you were saying, I totally agree with, you know, to be honest with yourself or what you are doing, to really be able to reflect on your own coping mechanisms. Are these healthy? How long can I manage this? Mm. How long can I afford to have a bottle of wine every night?
Yeah.
How much is damaging my liver? And actually, is that impacting on my work or how I deal with my children the next day? Mm. So being that reflective self of knowing how it's affecting me, my relationships, not just right now, but tomorrow, next week, next month. Mm. And every now and then just have a little bit of time out of actually, maybe I need to have only water for the next week and I will cope. I know I will be able to manage, and have maybe some other ways to deal with all those emotions coming up. Mm-hmm. And that's where, I guess, professionals could come in, you know, a good grief counselor. If it's a good workplace where they have EAP, Employment Assistance Program, you know, have that and use them, because a lot of these companies have these, but a lot of people sort of say, oh, no, I'm not gonna go along. And if you're lucky enough to have external supervision and people guide you through what you can and what you should be doing at work, navigating these waves, navigating these times, use them and use them wisely. So bring issues to the table rather than just turn up and get through those sessions. Really get involved, because that is what's going to help you to process and to progress.
Yeah. I love what you said, to process and to progress, because often I think that I talk to a lot of people that have lost a loved one, and people, I think our brains automatically try to process, like our minds are constantly trying to process it. But I know that for myself and for some of the people that I've talked to, there's a lot of processing going on. But sometimes that we can get caught in the processing and never progress. And that's when I found personally that having my therapist, that having you as my supervisor, that having colleagues that I could talk to, that having, you know, my some family members, because not all family members are able to support yourself, you. But, you know, find who are the people, who are your friends that can hold space for you. But not only, it's great to have people that will listen to you, especially for people like me that are external processors. I process things as I talk them out or I write them out. Mm-hmm. But I think that people that will challenge you, people that will ask you the hard questions, people that will sit with you in your discomfort and not necessarily keep on giving you unsolicited advice. That's not what I mean. But people that care enough about you, that are not scared to actually point out and say, hey, have you thought about this coping mechanism and how that's affecting you? Or have you thought about this particular habit of yours? Or have you sought some kind of help from a professional? Because also people can have that stigma, you know, like they don't want to go and use the professional assistance they might have from work because they feel like, I don't want to go to a psychologist because that's for crazy people. And it's true. People have said that to me. And I'm like, oh my God, if you only knew that the processing of that with a professional that can guide you and ask you the right questions and hold space for you in an active way can help you then progress, that is invaluable. And I highly recommend it.
Thank you for that, Tatiana. The other thing which I wanted to raise, because there are a number of people who's got religious practices, and prayer and having a trusted and a loving religious support can be very, very useful. So having, you know, somebody who you could go to and be there with your heart pouring out. So it doesn't have to be a psychologist, because some people feel uncomfortable with that because it's for crazy people. Mm-hmm. It's not. But having a religious leader, having somebody who is close and understanding your belief system and allows you to work and progress with that way of thinking, praying, meditating, being, that can be very, very useful as well. But again, you know, going back to how we started, it's very individual. Mm. For some people, that is their way. That is the most comfortable and comforting way to be. You know, sitting in a safe place where you feel that the cloak of that love, the cloak of your God, goddess, spirit will help you. That can be amazingly comforting. So people have different ways to utilize these different practices. And there's no one jersey fits all.
Yeah, it's so true what you're saying, because for me, I have always been a very spiritual person, and in the religion that I practice is Christianity. So Jesus is my man, you know, and I love him, and I read my Bible, and my husband and I were very active in our church community for many years, and we raised our children with Christian values about loving your neighbor, loving God, you know, and doing good in the world. What happened for me was that when Jason died, the particular worldview that I held from my religious practices I became discombobulated within it. And so all of a sudden, things that were really comforting for me within my religion became extremely disturbing. Mm-hmm. And I start questioning a lot of my belief systems, but not to the point that I don't believe in God anymore. Mm-hmm. I just went, could the real Jesus please stand up? Because I don't actually know who you are anymore. Because what I believed about God, or what I was taught about God within that context, fitted for my life before, which was in a heterosexual committed marriage with two children, you know, and so that fitted for my life then. All of a sudden, I become a widow, and I'm extremely sick physically and mentally unstable. And people were saying to me things that I really disagree with about God and about God's will for my husband to go to heaven. And I'm like, well, if that's God's will, I don't want to bar that. You know, bugger off, Jesus. Like, and I had to come to a place of reassessing a lot of my belief systems. And so that was really disturbing, to not have that cloak of my spirituality as it was before fitting this new skin of mine. And I had to figure out on my own, but also not completely on my own, because I had some people that I could talk and process that with. How does my spirituality have transformed now that I have transformed? Mm. And allowing room for that was really important for me. And going back into rediscovering a new way to relate to God that is deeper and more expansive and less dogmatic.
Sure.
Before.
And if you think about this in the workplace, because I have come across some disturbing sort of situations where, you know, somebody was grieving and in the, you know, kitchen in the workplace and in the coffee room, you know, somebody said, oh, come and I will pray for you. And this was a non-religious person. So this is where your own boundaries, your own ways of how you would like to deal with your grief and how you allow others to help you or not, who you allow into that space close to you is really important.
So important, yeah.
Because you don't want people to get to a space where you're just holding because you're just managing to keep yourself together, and somebody is pushing through that, you know, and potentially with a very helpful, you know, heart, but to be able to say, thank you very much, but I don't need that right now.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so important, because a lot of people come and they offer what they think it would be helpful for them. And they come from a good heart, you know. They see you distressed, they see you suffering, they want to offer something. I think human beings are incredible like that. I've experienced so many people wanting to offer some assistance and some comfort. But more often than not, is what they would like for themselves. Yeah. And very few people have come to me and say, what can I do for you that would help you right now? How do you want to be comforted? How do you want to be helped? And and having the ability to think for yourself. Not everybody's going to come and offer you that open door and say, hey, I can do this. Would that be helpful to you? People just come with their agenda and they come with what they think is going to be helpful and they slap that on top of you. And then they get offended when you say, actually, no, thank you. So I think it's really important. I know it's hard. From experience, I know it's really hard to as you're going through all that turmoil of grief to clarify your boundaries. But that is so important, especially when you're going back to a public place like your workplace, because you're going to find that you are not the same anymore and your colleagues are going to miss the old you and they are going to try to use the same strategies that worked in the past for other things. But you're not the same. So clarifying that before you go to work and go, okay, you can't think about every single thing that might happen and have an answer for that. But what you can do is to go, where does my boundaries lie? And you have to realign them all the time, but being really clear about, do I want people to pray for me? Do I want people to give me a hug or to show me some physical affection? Is that something that is okay for me, or do I prefer not to be touched? And so when you clarify those things, you can very confidently and kindly assert those things to people. And if people come to hug you, you can simply say, look, thank you, but that's not what I need right now, in a way that doesn't make their offer feel rejected and discarded, but at the same time that you don't diminish your own power and you don't simply allow people to overstep your boundaries, because that can be disempowering too.
Totally agree with you, Tatiana. And the other aspect is these things can change. Like for a period of time, you might not want anybody to hug you. You really want to be in that little cocoon of your own little energy space. But then it can shift and you really start craving, you know, the physical closeness of certain people. Mm-hmm. But allowing that change, allowing that shift, allowing that flexibility, and let people know that, you know, I at the moment I don't want anybody to hug you. But then when you feel that you need that physical connection, go to the safest person, go to the colleague who you know will understand, and just say, I'm ready for a hug now. And let that flow. So just because for certain times you want something or don't want something, it doesn't necessarily mean that will be like that forever.
Again, things change and nothing is the forever thing, you know, the permanent thing. Yeah. In grief, it's never like that. It always ebbs and flows and it comes in different forms and shapes. And well, thinking about this, you know, asking people what you need and being really clear about your own needs and your own boundaries, holding your own personal well-being practices and your self-care. Now, taking all of that we talked about into consideration. So say, for example, a grieving person is already doing everything they can to support themselves. They have stated some things to some of their colleagues, but there are a lot of people that work in amazing organizations that are very supportive, but there are also a lot of people that work in organizations that do not understand. What can we offer in terms of some guidance for people who are struck by grief and they are back at work, but they are in an environment that is not conductive or accepting of any type of grief expressions or any type of physical contact, or they might have a manager or a boss that is just not, the empathy is not there. You know, like you need to get yourself together and go to work, but then you know you're going to come into a place that feels hostile. What can people do? And I'm talking both from an emotional perspective, from, you know, a psychological perspective, but also I think a lot of people don't know what their rights are. with certain things. Can we talk a little bit about that, like practical things that people can do and what may be available for them?
Sure. I mean, at the end of the day, we cannot change other people.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a hostile person, they are hostile. So we can't influence what they do and how they do it. All we can do is influence how we respond to it and how we keep ourselves safe with that. I mean, I'm hoping that people have certain respect and value another person. But having a little bit of preparation before we go to work, if the environment is not conducive to emotional showing emotions, especially after a person passing. So preparing yourself almost like when people go to battle. I mean, you know, I'm not saying, you know, put battle gear on and have a sword out or something like that, but we all imagine ourselves sort of, you know, bracing ourselves and almost like, okay, I'm strong. And there could be little mantras you could say, you know, I'm good, I will manage today, I'm strong, da 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 da. And have those little times during the day, because all of us have morning tea, lunch, afternoon tea. We have to have those breaks. And those are the times where you could take yourself out of it and allow yourself to be your grieving emotional self. And again, reorganize yourself and rebrace yourself, put the armor on after your morning tea. And those times, potentially go outside, have the sunshine on your face, or have a cup of tea, or have a phone call with somebody who can support you. Ask a good friend to send you text messages so you, when you pick them up, you know, during your morning tea, afternoon tea, or lunchtime, so you have those positive inputs, so you could latch on those, so you could manage through the other times at the workplace. So create, and after work, again, have some of those well-being self-care practices where you could release that. Go for a swim, have a shower, change your clothes, put the work clothes with all that energy and stuff into the wash and put some other clothes on, which is your soul clothes, which is your freedom clothes, where you could just be yourself, grief, cry, rage, whatever you need to do. But change from that energy space, that clothing, so you can be your grieving self rather than that bracing, you know, having your helmet and goggles and personal protective equipment on.
But that's you know, that's great that you mentioned that, because I remember one time I was in a counseling session with my personal therapist, and the counseling session kind of like ran its course, and it was she asked me to imagine myself in a little bubble. And it was kind of like a protective bubble, you know, where I was inside there and I was holding my grief, because at that time there were lots of people that were having, not lots of people, a few people in my life, they were having a very negative response to some of the ways that I was expressing my grief. And I felt really torn because they were people that I cared about. And I was not trying to hurt them. I was trying to survive my grief and survive the death of my husband. But I felt like it was like this personal attack. They wanted me to change the way I was expressing my grief because they felt really uncomfortable, or they felt like I was not honoring God again, you know, the whole
thing.
It didn't suit them. And so what we did in that particular session was she was talking about, you know, this protective bubble, that in there, I was safe and I could hold my grief. And my grief could be a seven-head monster or a little dying kitten, you know, whatever that image was. But using my imagination to see me caring for my grief, protecting my grief, and being protected myself from, so people would shoot down those darts of rejection and you know, their discomfort projected on me. But, you know, that little bubble was kind of like, you know, holding me safe. And I remember thinking, well, this is stupid. No, I don't want to do this. This is stupid. This is just my imagination. And my therapist said something that I never forgot. She said, well, you use your imagination all the time to think about a very catastrophic future without your husband. Why can't you use your imagination to create a protective bubble around yourself right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought about that, but it was so true, because all my fears and the panic attacks and all was really because my mind was imagining a future that was completely bleak and decimated because mm-hmm. Jason was not going to be in that future. Right. And so thinking about the future would cause my body to go into shock, literally. And so, but that really was my imagination fueling my mind into an unwell kind of a very disturbed outcome. And it felt real. And so thinking about arming yourself, you know, putting that bubble around you or putting that the armor and going to a place where, you know, people might be hostile, that people might not understand you, that people might be cold, or people might pretend that nobody died, which can also be a slap in the face every time, you know, like, hold on a second, my world's falling apart, my person died, and now we're just going to pretend. So arming yourself, seeing yourself, imagining yourself putting on that armor or putting on that protective bubble and then going into that place can be really, really powerful.
Wonderful. Hang on, hang on.
Oh, we have a phone call. Hello? That's okay.
Just got rid of it. Maybe you need to cut that out.
I'll just leave it because life is messy and grief is messy. And so
That's true. Sorry. I know we are getting to the end of our little talk, but I wanted to tell you what happened to me at one time. This was a few years ago, because I was working in a Māori organization. And of course, I'm not Māori. I have Hungarian heritage. So I wasn't sort of sure how to behave and what to do because somebody passed away at the organization. And they invited me. And I was very fortunate to be able to sit with the kuia, the old lady who I knew quite well. And I just sat beside her and I really just felt that all I want to do is feel the energy and allow that energy to take me where I had to go, what I had to do. And with that quiet contemplation or being there in a neutral receiving way, I felt that I could be part of what was going on. My te reo Māori knowledge is quite limited, so I wasn't understanding everything what was happening. But just by opening my heart and allowing all that what was going on to wash through me, allowed my being to be part of the grieving process there. And afterwards, I talked with the kuia and I said, I wasn't sure what to do. did I do the right thing, or did I do anything, you know, culturally offensive? And I remember she smiled at me and she said, you sat there and you allowed yourself to be part of this. Mm. And sometimes just sitting there quietly is the best thing you can do. Mm. And I took that with me into a lot of different situations since then, where I wasn't sure what's the best way to do, what's the best way to respond, what to say. Mm-hmm. And I just allowed the energy and the silence to guide me. And sometimes sitting with somebody is the best way to show that you understand their grief, you understand what they need, and give that space and time for them to reach out. And that reach out could be a hand, that reach out could be a thank you, or nothing, because they don't have the energy to do and say anything. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to share that sometimes, especially in the workplace, we are not certain what's the best way to navigate and help somebody who's grieving. But by sitting with somebody and letting that energy, that spirit, whatever your way, the silence to balance things out and bring things to a place where you could, in a way, say, maybe not with words, that I feel and understand where you are.
Yeah.
And to me, that is sometimes the best and easiest way to be.
That is so, so beautiful and so powerful and so authentic. And I think that we are scared of authenticity sometimes in the workplace because we feel like we're not being professionals enough, but we are human beings doing a job. And so bringing our authenticity, our humanity to it can make all the difference. And as you're talking, I thought about how lucky I am to have worked at Changing Minds, because in that place, not only I could bring my grief to work, but I had colleagues that were so supportive and made so much space for me in my messiness, you know, and then in return, I could be there for them. And I think on that note, one of the things that I want to say is that a couple of things. One is that people often will say to me, if you need to talk, I'm here for you. That's great if that's somebody that I used to talk to. But if that's somebody that I never shared anything about my life, why would I? And they can come from a really good place and have good intentions, but don't offer that because that's stupid. Like, it's stupid. Like, why would I talk to you about my dead husband or my dead child or my dead parent? Before, we didn't have that kind of rapport. And so don't force an intimacy that it wasn't there before. Sure. If the intimacy, if the connection, if the rapport was there, build on that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you might not have the stand to be the person that person will come to talk to about their dead person, but you can bring them a cup of tea, even if they didn't ask, or even if they are not going to drink it. Yeah. You know, you can offer to relieve them of some of their duties. You know, you can say, hey, would you like me to do this and this and this for you? Think about what is it that is in your capability of doing and offer that. They might say no, thank you, but keep on offering, keep the door open, because that alone will show them that you care. And that you are not just being the person that's the weirdo that wants to talk about deep things that never had the rapport for before, but also you are going to show your humanity to them. And people just want their humanity to be seen, especially when we're grieving. We want our grief to be, to have space. Yes. You know? And in the workplace, yeah, let's be human in the workplace. You know, it might not be appropriate for you to hug your colleague and burst into tears with them and have, you know, a grief session there. But if you see somebody struggling, just look at them and say, hey, I can see that you're not okay right now. What can I do? Would a cup of tea help? Would take a break earlier help? You know, be the person that offers the empathy, that shows compassion. But find that from yourself in an authentic way. Don't go offering things that you can't. And don't say, whatever you need, I'll be here for you. Because, oh my God, that's my pet peeve. Do not say that to grieving people. It's not whatever you need. Decide what you can do and then commit to doing that. That is far better than saying whatever you need, because if they gather the courage to come and ask and then you can't deliver, oh boy, that's not good.
I totally agree. Because when people sort of say, oh, what can I get for you? Oh, get me a Ferrari. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, be specific, be realistic. Oh, very, very important and very empowering, because then what we talked about earlier, you have those boundaries. You know that this is my relationship with you. So within that, I can offer this.
Yeah.
But not like, yeah, if I never talk to you about anything personal and then suddenly you want to have a grief session with me, it's like, hey, that's a bit weird.
Yeah, back off, weirdo. I don't want that. Okay, so I know that we need to come to a close. I just want to ask some things that you may or may not know. But say, for example, for people that are struggling going back to work and they might or may not be in a hostile environment, you know, some people are just scared to ask and they might not know what they can ask. In terms of practical things, like we talked a little bit in the beginning about the time allocated for bereavement leave. You can talk to your HR about that. You can talk to your direct manager about that. But what are some of the things that in your experience, you know, and I know that this varies from organization to organization, but people can ask if their organization would support them with certain practical help, what would be an indication of what they can ask? They might not have their HR might not, you know, be equipped to offer counseling sessions, for example, but are there any other things that people can ask for that are practical help?
Sure. I mean, some of those could be coming back to work in a structured way. So not straight away full time, but maybe start with part time, maybe start with half day and building up to full time. Could be working from home if it's possible some of the time, or allowing the flexibility of at times work from home, because remember that wave, you know, when we are in the middle of a really difficult time, to be able to work from home. For some workplaces it's possible, other workplaces it's not. So that sort of gradual way of coming back to work, part-time, working from home, that aspect. Having extra leave and take some time of that leave as half days. So again, playing with that you might have enough energy to come back for the morning, or if you are not sleeping well, you sleep in a little bit and able to take the morning off and you work in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So have that. Using different type of leave for assistance, so be able to use some annual leave, maybe sick leave if you have to attend to doctors, et cetera, et cetera. Asking for either external supervision, internal supervision, employee assistance program help, any type of assistance you might need, because you might need extra medical assistance. So some companies have that in-house or a way to support people. Mm-hmm. Some organizations provide things like, okay, 6 months of yoga or meditation for the person to help through a difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those sort of support packages can be really useful for the individual. And you can ask, you might not get it. Mm-hmm. But these are things which you will be able to ask, maybe finish earlier certain days because you have to attend to certain things, and then offer it later on that you could make it up another time, another day. So some of those things could be quite specific things, but again, know what you need, know what works for you and how you could deal with that.
Yeah. And I think don't be scared to ask.
Yeah.
Because like you said, you might not get what you want, but if you do not ask, you do not know if you can get it, you know? And I think being honest, you know, with your boss, with your manager, with your colleagues, and go, it's been really difficult right now and I'm struggling and I don't necessarily know what I need, but as I'm figuring out day by day, I will communicate with you and keep that communication open, because I think a lot of problems happen when we don't communicate. I've seen that on my own work life. Like if I was so distraught that I just go back into my own cocoon and I did not communicate, and there is my beautiful boss that is so compassionate and my amazing colleagues wanting to help me, but I completely retreated and they did not know what to do. And so sometimes, not that we are there to babysit other people's emotions, especially when we are grieving and carrying our own, but keeping that communication channel open is really important, because work is your, you know, for most people is your livelihood, is how you're going to alleviate the stress of the bills and the financial pressure, especially if you lost a partner that used to carry half of that, you know?
Yeah,
so communication is really, really important. Yeah.
And another one, which I know some companies started to do, is rather than, you know, sending flowers and you know, basket of, you know, lollies or whatever, maybe a prescription for food bag for a month, or, you know, or somebody to clean your house, you know, a voucher for that. So some of those things, rather than have, I mean, I'm not saying some flowers are lovely, but especially when you have children or something, oh my God, what am I going to cook? I need to go to the supermarket, whatever. You know, a food bag for a month could be so useful because it's there, it's easy. So things like that can be an organization's way to show support in a way which is relevant, specific, and really helpful.
Yeah. And I would say on that note, hold off on the lasagna, people, because there's one can take when you're bereaved. I kid you not. Like, it's really lovely that you had that thought, but, you know, expand to other things. Because, like,
exactly.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, Edit, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. So many of the things that you said really sparked lots of things for me, and I'm so grateful to have you in my life as my supervisor and also now as my friend. And I'm so grateful that you said yes to come to this podcast. I feel really blessed, and I know there's so many people listening to this conversation will also feel really blessed. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, Tatiana. And as you said, if anybody feel that they want to reach out, no doubt you will give my email, phone number, things like that, because I'm happy to assist, happy to help people to navigate through difficult times, grief, but other, you know, complex issues as well.
Yeah. And can you just give us your website? I'll put that on the show notes, but if you can tell us your website and how people can reach out to you.
Sure. My website is www.activeworklife.com, and my email is edit@activeworklife.com, and my phone number is 0210-327223. And again, my name is Edit Horvath. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. And I will be talking to you soon. Thank you. We have come to the end of our episode. And I want to acknowledge you, my darling, who have been listening to this conversation. Thank you so much for your time and your attention. Chances are you found crazy grief because you are grieving the death of your person, or you want to support someone who is grieving. I am so sorry our paths have crossed in this way, but I am glad we found each other. My email is on the show notes. Please reach out. I would love to hear from you. Do subscribe to this podcast and leave us a 5-star rating so we can continue to produce more meaningful conversations about grief. And remember, you're not going crazy. You're just grieving. Take a moment to breathe, reach out to someone you trust, and be kind to yourself. Light and peace.